my partner and I, we came in 74, I think, or 73, one of those states. And he had actually bought the land in probably a couple of years before that. He had been teaching in Boston, and one of his professors, one of his co-teachers, had married a woman from Table Head. And he said, "Ah, Steve, you should come up and see the island. It's so beautiful." So it was, you know, they had the summers off, and he jumped on his motorcycle, came up, actually fell in love with the island. And before, and he went all around the, he actually bought a piece of land in Table Head, and then one down near Panmure Island. And then I met him, I think, 2 years after that. And we started the summer up here. And we went to the land that was near Panmure Island. It's in Gaspereau. We had 40 acres on St. Mary's Bay. And we used to go down by the water and camp. And it was so funny because when I was in Boston, I was leaving and he and I were sort of splitting up. And he said, well, and I was going on a 6-month extended, because back in 71, young people, we just, everybody was hitchhiking all around the place. It was safe to do. People were traveling. So I was a registered nurse in Boston. I met two other girls that were starting the same day I did. We were in orientation together. And in 6 months, we decided that we were all going to quit. And I had a little blue VW. And the three of us put all of our camping stuff in this thing. We decided we'd go for 6 months all across Canada and the United States. And we actually did that. We were gone from May until December, just before Christmas. And on the way, he said, well, when you go to Prince Edward Island, why don't you stay on my land? And we were just starting this trip, and we were just there. We hadn't camped before, so we, you know, first on the way up in Maine, we're doing the KOA places and all that. So we get to Prince Edward Island, and we're sort of assuming that when he said camp on my land, there would be like a place to camp. And he said, and this is going to show you what PEI was like. He said, when you find the land, there's going to be a long lane along one end, because you know most of the land is like these strips of land. And he said, you're going to drive through three fields, and then you're going to come to the woods, he said, and then you'll be right on the water's edge. So anyways, we had never driven through fields or anything like that, and we came here, and, you know, the grass was really high up, you know, and so I got out and actually sat on the roof to make sure that it was safe to drive. You know, we didn't know, you know, we knew nothing about the island. And we drove through one field and another field and another field, and we came to this wood. And so we started walking through the woods thinking that we'd come to this clearing to put our tent. He never told us. There was no clearing. So we get to the edge, and it's sort of a high bank, and we're sort of looking, and it's like where are we to put our tent? Well, anyways, we found a little area that if on the bottom of the tent we made these big X's where there were, like, things you shouldn't step on or sleep on or do, and it was so close to the edge that when you went out the door, you were, like, this far from falling over the bank. Anyways, we stayed 2 weeks here. We loved it. We spent the whole time on the beach. We would go to the gas stations to get water. And at that time, there was this a sale on from the Confederation Center that if you bought all, there were three plays, and if you bought all three tickets, you got a discount. And we thought, man, we ought to be doing this. So we went into, we would buy lobsters. We'd cook them on the beach. We'd lay in the water on the beach, and then we'd get up the bank, go in the car, and then we'd drive all the way to Charlottetown to watch these three plays. It's nice. We fell in love with camping in the rough. After that, we bought a Rand McNally guide, and we would only go to the campgrounds that had no facilities because they were all in these beautiful pristine places. There were no big campers and all that. And so it was really Prince Edward Island that broke us into the fact that we could actually do wilderness camping. And it, you know, and we met the neighbors, and they were really nice to us. And then Steve and I actually got back together. We started coming up, and our neighbors, I'm telling you, the Jamesons were just phenomenal. They used to love, they were a family of, at that time, they had 5 children, two were away, and 3 were home. And we would go down every night, sit around the table, and Gladys would pull out her homemade breads and jams and biscuits, and we'd sit around the table, and we'd talk for hours. And it ended up that when they heard we were going to move here, we were going to go around the world. We got as far as Bermuda. We were doing self-study at the time. We were into yoga, and we were into astrology, and we were eating macrobiotically. We took all of our grains to Bermuda, all of our books. We were in Bermuda for about 2 weeks and went, oh my goodness, we haven't opened one book. All we did was ride the moped, play Scrabble, and eat biscuits. So we decided that that definitely was not going to be a plan that we should follow through, like staying all winter there. So we changed our plans and we came to PEI. We came to PEI in February. And because I was a registered nurse, we wanted to immigrate. We decided we would try this living off of our land. But because we're from the States, we had to actually get through immigration. So we came up and we spent a month in the Queen's Arms Hotel. It was February. We were in a basement apartment. The snow covered the windows totally. We were still playing Scrabble. A lot of Scrabble.
Same here.
And we, I went around to the hospital, and at that time in 73, there was a real shortage of nursing. And so every one of the hospitals was going to just take me right off the street. They all went, because you had to have a letter in order to immigrate, because you had to have a statement that you were not taking a job away from a citizen. So they had to write a letter saying they had advertised and couldn't fill the position. So I got my letter, like, instantly. Stephen tried. Wasn't very successful. So we went back, and I went through the immigration process, and then he just drove up with me. And the guy at the border thought he was just going to help me and then go back. But he stayed, and he wanted to try to find someone that would give him a letter in the same way so that he could immigrate, which eventually did happen. He got a letter from the Killorns, because they had the Drug and Alcohol Institute.
Yeah.
And he was a counselor as well.
Okay.
So they wrote him a letter, and he actually got in that way. But before we came, one of the things we wanted to do, we had this plan. We were going to live on our land. We were going to have animals. We were going to raise bees. And that was about as far as we got as to how we were actually going to make a living. I think Stephen thought maybe he could teach part-time at the university or something like that. And so we decided that we'd order these bees. Now, we've never kept bees in our lives. So you get the magazine, we do all that. And we say to the Jamesons, our neighbors, we say, this bee stuff is probably going to come before we arrive. Can we send it to your house? Would you be okay with that? And they said, oh, sure, you know. So anyway, I finally get immigrated. We come in, and our bee equipment is there, and we take it. And I mean, and of course, everything we did, the Jamesons actually had to get involved. So here we are sitting in their kitchen, and Ralph was really handy with tools, and we're all banging these bee frames together and doing all this. We find out the next time that we order any bee equipment that it arrives, that there's a cost, that the shipping was not part of the payment. So we look at one another and we say, well, what happened the first time we sent our bee stuff here? The Jamesons never said anything that they had to pay $50 or $60 to get our bee equipment. So we go down and we say, Gladys, when you had our bee equipment arrive, did you have to pay something for it? Well, I don't remember. We may have. We said, Gladys, you had to. We had to pay, you know? And so, I mean, it's that kind of stuff. And they absolutely, I think what happened was we were such a breath of fresh air to them. And they were in a, they'd been in this community and they had a lot of neighbors, but it ended up that if they needed anything or whatever, we became their neighbors that they always came to.
Were they farmers?
Yeah. Okay. They were farmers that owned the land below us. But what happened was farming was so bad for them that they sold the land to a doctor in the States. They loved the land, moved across the road, and built a house, and then Howard went to work on the road. And then Gladys became a, she was a caregiver, and so they loved horses, they loved animals, he still had a barn. Howard would go to these card plays, and he'd end up winning either a pig or chicken. We'd always go in and say, Howard, how did you do? And he'd just get this twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
And he'd tell us about the beautiful, beautiful pig he had out there, you know, that he won. And he just, oh, he was just, we just absolutely adored the Jamesons. They were so wonderful.
Were they relatively young? Much later.
No, their kids were, their youngest was at probably maybe 12 when we met them. And there were 5 years, so 12 and... Oh, no, he was even younger, maybe. Probably about 13, 16 or 17, 20, 21. That's the age of the four that were home, and the other ones were a little older.
Okay.
But the entire family just really embraced us. And the funniest story was, when we came from Boston. We had no idea of the culture of the island. And, you know, Boston in the 70s had gone through the flower child age. You know, people were living together. I mean, it was just, we were meditating. We were doing all these things. And we come to the island, and it was like almost a culture shock. But it never occurred to us that back then it would be hard on the islanders to understand that we were living together. So on our mailbox, we obviously just put his name and my name. And the Jamesons, when they would try to, you know, we were there a lot, and they would go to introduce us to their friends, and they never knew what to say I was. Like, here's Stephen Merrill and, you know what I mean? And so they say, and the wife, or and but you know, they didn't know what to call me because, you know, what was I? And the funny thing is, I had really wanted to go to the School of Visual Arts. It was the place we could do weaving, woodworking. That's where a lot of us met. I met all the people from the Culloden Road there because they were either learning crafts of some sort.
That were the Holland College campuses by Rupert?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was called, when I went in the beginning, it was called the School of, maybe Handcraft School of Design or something, Handcraft School of something.
I was thinking,
And then it changed to the School of Visual Arts.
I think Malcolm Stanley taught pottery there at one point.
Yes.
Okay.
See, that's where I met Malcolm.
Okay.
And that's where Nancy Oates and Cherry Paget and myself, we were all in the same class together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I met all the people down on the Culloden Road.
Okay.
Them. And so Nancy was a woodworker, and Sherry did jewelry, and I did weaving and wood.
So what? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Was it 1974 that you camped here, and then 1975 that you moved?
No, we actually moved in 74. So it would have been probably from 72 and 73, we kept coming up in the summer.
Okay.
We had this very elaborate setup down by the beach. People would come and stay, and you call this camping? Although, we lived in our basement. We ended up getting married on our land, and then we built our house exactly on the spot that we got married. And the funniest thing is, when we decided to get married on our land, we sort of wanted a, somebody, we, neither of us were in a part of any church, mm-hmm. which is, again, you know, I mean, the fact that the Islanders could embrace people who weren't married, two different names on the mailbox, had no affiliation with any church whatsoever, I mean, talked of, and did things like, that they can't even imagine. But, you know, they absolutely were just so fabulous. I think that's what you find when you talk with the people down the Clawdon Road, is that they found that we were really embraced. You know, and I think that's why it worked and why so many of us stayed. Because a lot of the things that, if we hadn't had the Jamesons to ask them what to do about stuff, you know, we really did need their support. You know, and they were just so generous. And every time there was a storm, the Jamesons, with their background, they lived in a place where they always had wood fires and the whole thing. But when they moved across the road, they had no wood stove. Everything was electric. So whenever the electricity went out, they got cold. They couldn't make a cup of tea. And we, of course, being back to the Landers, we had our wood stove, two of them as a matter of fact, because, you know, you were going to burn wood. And so anytime there was a storm and they started to get cold, we'd call down and we'd say, the tea's on. And they would come up and we would sit around the table and play cards until, like, you know, 2 in the morning. We'd have these, like, one of my most fond memories of the Jamesons is being storm saved and having them come up and, you know, having the wood stove on, and Howard would always get this twinkle in his eye because we lived in our basement for 9 years because we thought that we didn't have money. We didn't have any money to build, talk about strange homes for a while. We had no money to put anything on top. So we thought that this would be the most economical way, because if we had our foundation done, then we could just keep on going up. So we had this flat roof, and then there was this door that came up and had like a little thing that went down that way to keep the water going off. And so when people drove up, it's almost like a stage door, you know, just sticking up, and then the chimney came right out of the flat roof. And we had that for like 9 years. It was the strangest thing. But when you came down, he was very creative and artistic, and so was I. And the place was lovely. It really was so cozy and warm. And Howard used to come down and say, I don't know why you would ever put anything more up. You have everything you need here. But, of course, it lacked a bit in light. You know, we had big windows, but still. And then when the snow came, it made me think of when we stayed at the Queen Arms, because it would blow over the window. And one time, we couldn't get out our door. And we had to call down to the Jamesons. And their youngest son had white hair, and he was really sort of known for his temper and him being a bit of a rebel and all that. And he came walking right over the house to see it had covered up the entire house that we were in. And we couldn't get out our door. And he said, have no fear, the white fellow's here. Some about our door. And Gladys, we had been there probably 3 years living there, and Stephen couldn't get a job. So we were talking about, he was going to go, we were thinking moving. And we didn't know this until after we had really got situated and things turned around and we stayed. But Gladys had come up, and she put a rosary on our fence post by our lane and prayed that we wouldn't leave. Isn't that beautiful? Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the touching thing that, you know, and she never told us this. We found this out from her children. Yeah.
So were you originally from Boston?
Pennsylvania. And Stephen was from the state of Washington.
Okay. Were you
going
to school in Boston?
No, I was a registered nurse then.
Okay.
Yeah, and he was the superintendent in my apartment building.
Where are we from in Pennsylvania?
Do you know where State College is? Penn State University.
Okay.
That's sort of the biggest place that I could, because otherwise you would never know anything.
Yeah.
I was about 25 miles from Penn State University, which is sort of in the central part of Pennsylvania.
So, just trying to picture this the city background you have?
No.
Okay.
Country.
Okay.
But not quite like TEI.
Yeah.
TEI has still has the fabric of community, whereas even though I came from a country place, the fabric of community was gone because people had, like brothers and sisters, did not live in the same area. People had moved, you know, so it you know, to come here and find that, you know, you've got the Dixon Corner or you've got, you know, an area that's all, you know, one family still. Yeah, I mean, the island had that kind of quality, the fact that it still had it dispersed.
Okay, now, Sarah, what gave you the idea that you want to live this lifestyle here on PEI? Was it something you wanted to do while you're in Boston, but you're not going to be in
Well,
Boston?
Well, because I had gone, I lived in Boston, and then when we traveled, we spent the whole time, our whole traveling was, for that 6 months was absolutely in the wilderness. We did all the national parks, but not where people were.
Mm-hmm.
And when we finished the trip, there was no way that I would ever go back to Boston again. You know, I just really needed the country. I needed green. And so when we were on Cape Cod, the Cape used to be like Prince Edward Island was when we came here. But back in the 70s, it was getting really, really overrun. And so when we came up here, it just felt like it was, just had that sort of untouched beauty, that unspoiled beauty.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the reasons that brought us here. And then the thought of doing the back to the landing thing was probably just from the time, because it was just following the flower child era, where people were rebelling against, you know, all the traditional ways, like the war, the Vietnam War, and all the politics. And, like, my father was just like, he could not believe, because up until that time, if you were a nurse and you got a job in a hospital, you would work there for 25 years. I mean, he could not believe that when I came home, I was going on this extended camping trip for 6 months with three girls, that I quit my job in 6 months. My first job, I only kept it for 6 months. And then, when he heard that I was no longer eating meat, that I was a vegetarian, he just could not believe it. It just broke his heart. So it's like we were part of the generation that came out of that era, you know, the wanting something different.
What would have been your major influences in that approach? Was there any authors that you were really into, or was it just because of your peers, for instance?
Actually, no. I had a cousin, and she was very much into reading Nietzsche and all the existential stuff, and so I sort of got into doing that. But when I went to Boston, my partner was really, he was doing yoga, he was eating macrobiotics, we got into meditation, and that really was what really, that was probably for me the major influence that just absolutely turned my life around. And everything that I do now, because I teach yoga, I'm a massage therapist, I'm totally into, I teach meditation. So it's like that was sort of his gift to me, was to sort of give me the area that I would be just passionate about forever. And since that, I was 21 when I met him, and I'm 58 now. And all those things have been the foundation for the things that I do now, and have done the whole time. So, you know, the idea of wanting, and it was funny, when we came up here, we kept thinking that what we'd like to do on our land eventually is make it a retreat center. But when we first started, we thought, well, we'll start off with these animals and these bees. So we got our bees going, and we actually had them for, you know, we never got any higher than 3 hives. But we had them for at least 12 years. And then Howard had a chicken house, a chicken coop, and we hauled it up to our land because we thought we'd get chickens. And then after we started living on the land, you know, that sort of fantasy that it's all going to work out, because CPI has a bit of, when you come in the summertime, it has a bit of a magical quality. It's sort of gentle and kind, and you just sort of think that, you know, things will grow well, and we never had a really long-range plan. It was just sort of, we'd get up here and we'd start small. The bees were smart, going small, and we'd get some chickens, and we just sort of get a little job, and we try to spend as much time on our land. We never got any chickens. The chicken coop was it. When we got up here, we realized that we had to get jobs. So I actually went, we lived in Charlottetown for 2 years, and I went to the School of Visual Arts, and I took weaving as a major and woodwork as a minor, and Stephen was still, he was doing some make-work projects, like for the Red Cross, and it was funny, he had these degrees, but as he started to apply for jobs, he started to realize that he had to just keep coming down, and anybody put on the thing. And when I was doing this craft show, he had a friend in the States who showed him this little paddle boat. It was made of wood, and you would wind up, maybe you might even, as a younger child, even gotten one of these from somebody, and had a little rubber band on it, on the paddle, and you'd wind it up, and you'd put it in the water, and the rubber band would go, pop, 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 and the little boat would go going down the, you know, the bathtub or a little trough of water. So I had woven for 6 months, really a lot of work, trying to do these really creative items. Stephen said, I think I'll make these little paddle boats. So we had a porch on the back of our apartment, and we had this little, one of those little bandsaws, and he made, I think, 50 boats or 100 boats, I don't know what. We went to the, do you remember the craft show that was at the Confederation Center? Maybe not, maybe before your time. It's still there, but it used to be, crafts was huge. That was sort of a connection that a lot of us had, like, pottery with the Stanleys, myself and Nancy and Sherry, and there were several other people that were, you know, like the Kosers. She was a potter. A lot of the back of the landers made their living, and Michael Paget did woodworking. That was sort of one of the ways that we made our living, or were attempting to. So he decided he'd go to the fair and be in the booth, and I was with a couple other women. And in the first day, he was selling these little paddle boats, and I think he sold out the first day. He made more money on these little paddle boats in one day than I made for my 6 months of weaving. And I only tell you this because when we, and then the next year, he made double the amount and still sold out. So when we were really trying to decide whether we would stay on the island or move away, they had all these grants. And they had these grants for starting a small business. And Stephen had the idea that maybe we should start this woodworking business. And he would do these paddle boats. And we'd create some more things. And maybe that's how we could make a living. And that's actually what we did. We created a business. We did the woodwork. And we supported ourselves for 12 years on our land. We built the building across the road from the house. And eventually we got the house on top of the basement. And we had three girls, and they never had to go to babysitters or anywhere else because we were home. I would work in the evening, Stephen would work in the day, and anytime the girls had naps, I would go out and work with him. And we had these little monitors so that we could hear them when they woke up. So in essence, even though we didn't end up with anything other than a cat and a dog, we ended up actually living our dream because we spent all of our time on our own. And we made our living from there. It was just in the form we hadn't envisioned when we first came.
How much land did you have then?
40 acres.
40 acres. Okay. Is it all rough?
No, it was actually farmland. There were the three fields I told you went through.
Okay.
And there was always projects. And one of the projects was reforestation. And we decided because we weren't using the land, we should reforest it. But anyway, the reforestation was not done very well because they put all the same kind of trees in a row. So these are like a larch. So we had a whole field of these larch trees all in a row. And then the next field, they did Christmas trees all in a row. They were nice. I mean, they grew up and they turned a lovely color in the fall, but they would be of no value for anything because first they were in a row, too close together, and they just got, you know, I mean, it's not the way forests grow.
Yeah.
But back then, they were experimenting, so we were sort of part of the experiment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said you were trying the bees. Didn't quite go through the chicken experiment. Did you try any other?
No, the bees were it. The bees were our back to the lander success story. And what we would do is, you were supposed to, when it got really hot, you were supposed to make sure that you got extra supers on them so they didn't create another queen. Because when they do, then it's warm. And we got so bad at it that we'd be up at our woodwork and we'd see this huge conglomeration of bees moving past us. And we'd have to sort of go and try to see where they land and try to recoup our bees. Yeah, we were not, we basically had enough honey for ourselves. And I actually, in terms of back to the landers though, I made all our bread and we had a wood stove and I cooked on that. We ate vegetarian wise, so I, you know, made all of our yogurt and everything. So in that sense, you know, that was sort of what everybody here had been giving up. And we were sort of, you know, trying to eat really sort of all homemade and not bought and that kind of thing. I don't know if it's so much back to land as it was trying to be more mindful of what you're putting in your body, which I think was part of what people did. Now, all the people that we met said they weren't going to have electricity. They weren't going to have, they like Sherry, and they had the wells where you pumped it. We never quite did that. We decided that our back to the lander thing was going to be that we were going to have a house that was energy efficient. And so we had built on a greenhouse, and we had planned to put stones in there so that it would be a heat sink for our house. And we had situated it so all the windows were on the south side. We had a lot of windows. We had no windows on the north. We had hoped that we could have a windmill and a generator. That was our vision of being a back to the lander. We sort of never decided, like I think some of the other people were really not going to have indoor plumbing and all that stuff. But we sort of always planned to have that. That was never part of our package.
Indoor plumbing was the first thing to come into most people.
Yeah, it was. I think it was, yeah. But I can remember, I mean, we had it from like day one. We did not go that route. It's not part of our. But you know, we spent all our time on our own. The two of us worked together. You know, we used to have our tent set down up all summer long. We'd have these, we called it a camp out. And so we'd have all these people that would come and put all their tents in our, because we had a lovely space right next to the bay. And, we really loved that space.
You mentioned that the Jamesons were very warm when you moved in beside them. Beyond that, what kind of reaction did you get from the islands?
Well, I'm not a good one to ask. I'll tell you why. Because I'm quite introverted, and I just never cared. I didn't pay any attention. Stephen was much more the person who went out. But we never felt any issues. People were always quite welcoming and warm. I don't know if there was, like, we would never know what if there was gossip that people what people thought of us, you know, because basically our major connection was with the Jamesons, and our children then would have. See, the problem was we actually sent our kids to French immersion, so we might have figured out more of that had they stayed in the community that we were in, because they should have gone to Southern Kings. And that's where all the children went in our neighborhood. And that would have actually made us more of a connection, because where your children go to school is who they have friends with, who then you intermingle with. But we really, really, one of the things people would say to us when we came here is, aren't you worried about the education your children are going to get? Because in the States, they really feel that the education on the island would be poor compared to what they did. And we just really felt that the one gem of the education system that our girls could take advantage of would be to go into French immersion. And I'm telling you, back in those days, you had to really work hard to get your child in French immersion, because there was this number system where you would call and you had to be within the first 20 feet. Well, talk about panicking. We had ourselves stationed everywhere, four or five people trying to call because we were desperate to get our children in to French immersion. Finally, for Ellison, I went and spent the whole night outside the school. I went at 6 o'clock so that she could be on the list. I mean, now they don't even, you know, it shows you how the tides change. So our children did not go to school in the community that we lived. And so I don't really have, like, their friends then, interestingly enough, were from the Iris area, the Quad Road, like Emily's best friend and Lindsay's best friend, their parents were from that community. So that made our connection became much more with that community. And so the only real close connection that we had where we lived were the Jamesons.
Okay.
Yeah. But I am really convinced, though, that if they had gone to school in Southern King, we would have really had much more of a connection with the community. But there was another family down the road, and Stephen worked as a carpenter with this guy, and he actually built our house with Stephen. And so it was another family that we got quite close to. So I don't know. I don't think there was any issues with us being there. I think we were considered a bit strange. You know, I'm sure we were. But I don't think people cared. I mean, it was just, you know, it's different if you do something that upsets the community. But we lived really quite peacefully there. You know, we didn't do anything to create any issues for people. So there, my sense is,
one of the things on this, there's a view on this, one of the things I've been thinking about is why some people that came back to the Landers stuck around, and others maybe stuck around a few years and then people.
My sense is it really has to do with sort of one's life journey, and, you know, I don't really get the sense that people leave because they don't like it. I just think that, you know, I was talking to you about Wendy. Do you know Wendy Ader? Is that her last name, Wendy Ader? She and her fellow, she was with, they had beanies, they sold lots of honey. She always wore the hip boots. Anyway.
I know the name, I'm sorry.
Anyway, the reason she left the island, she loved the island, but she got this amazing job with CBC in Toronto. So my sense is that, you know, it's like the dimensions that come into your life that you go, oh my gosh, this is meant for me. Mm-hmm. And it just takes you to places that you go. Sometimes it's just a stepping stone here to meet the people or the situations or the places that then takes you. I mean, because I am certain that if there were a situation that came into my life,